Talk, your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace. I'm Larry Wood, your host, and we're happy to have you with us today to be a part of Peace Talk. You know, we oftentimes hear about the crisis in the religious world, and it seems like the atheists have taken over in certain places, certainly in the media and things like that, and they are very combative, and sometimes, well, they just frustrate us to death. Well, have you ever heard of one actually coming to Christ? Well, it does happen, and that's our guest today, a committed atheist, in fact, committed atheist by the ripe old age of 11. And so we're happy to have with us today Jordan Manji, whose story recently appeared in Christianity Today, telling her story of how she came to Christ at Harvard University. So, Jordan, glad to have you with us today.
It's great to be here, Larry. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's get right into it. How does one become a committed atheist by the age of 11?
Yeah, so my parents both don't believe in God. My dad, in particular, is a philosophy professor at a couple of community colleges back home in Orange County, California. And they never really taught me what to believe, but I just didn't really see evidence of God in the world. And having attended some of my dad's philosophy classes, I kind of heard some classic arguments against God, like the omnipotence paradox, could God create a stone so big he couldn't lift it, or the Euthyphro dilemma, it's something good because God has declared it to be good, that it's based on just his whims, or does God declare it good because it is good and he's just identifying ethics? You know, these sorts of problems I found deeply troubling and suggested to me that perhaps God didn't exist.
And, of course, in the story you tell how that when you would battle your young atheist friends in elementary school, that, I guess, having sat in a class with a college professor on philosophy, that's why you won, huh?
Probably. I had thought about it a lot more than my friends had. And to be honest, the answers to the questions that I was asking were pretty easy. Once I really started looking, I found the answers quite quickly. But no Christians that I knew actually tried to answer them thoughtfully.
Okay, so you ended up in the fall of 2008 as a freshman student at Harvard University, and having won all the debates in high school and elementary school and all those conversations, you finally met a young man at Harvard University who was different, who dealt with those arguments differently. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I became friends with John Joseph Porter, who was a Christian, and at first we started talking about politics, and then gradually that transitioned to religion. Apparently we like talking about all those things you're not supposed to talk about in polite company. And it was the first time I had met a Christian who was really willing to argue and engage with these sort of questions that I was grappling with. And he couldn't answer every question. I turned to reading things online for a lot of it. But he wouldn't let me settle. He actually helped me find the answers to particular questions and made a compelling case for them. As well, he really pushed me and questioned me on my worldview and how I had come to hold it.
Did you find that in your experience since you came to Christ that perhaps many people who claim to be atheists, I mean, they're honest about that, but in reality, they've never seriously examined their own position?
I think you find that most people, both atheists and Christians, haven't spent a lot of time believing or investigating what they believe and trying to really figure out why. In our culture, in a lot of ways, I think at large, it really depends on what the majority framework is. And from my perspective, as a teenager, and then as a young adult, my impression of the culture at large is that it's much easier to adopt a secular view, and in other regions of the country, that may be more difficult, where there are more Christians who haven't tried to really figure out why they believe what they do. But I think a lot of it has to do with the culture, and it's very easy to take on these kind of simplistic ideas and to have a little bit of knowledge, and oftentimes a little bit of knowledge is more dangerous than complete ignorance, because you think you've got it all figured out, but in fact, you really haven't dealt with it that thoroughly. And that's what I found when I came to Harvard, that I was finally exploring these questions from a position of intellectual honesty and was grappling with them in a way that I hadn't really done before.
And I was struck by your testimony that you begin to dig into some of the great Christian thinkers, particularly those of the past. What did you find there?
Yeah, so I realized that I was just pretty woefully ignorant of how influential Christianity really was. So I think about some of the writers that I loved, like John Donne, one of my favorite poets. And in one of his holy sonnets, he has a bunch of these holy sonnets. You would think holy sonnet would be a giveaway that, hey, this guy's really religious. And he writes to God, "I'll never be chaste unless you ravish me." This is the language, a sexual imagery he applies to God, because this is how closely connected he feels to God. And I loved Donne, and I loved all of his other work. I didn't really understand that line, but I loved his ideas like No Man is an Island. I loved his Valediction Forbidding Mourning. I loved so much of his writings. And I just assumed, like, hey, this is just common wisdom. This is just, you know, John Donne's just a really smart guy. And it never occurred to me that maybe his ideas were derived from his faith, that maybe this strong personal belief in God that led him to write, "I'll only be chaste if you ravish me," to the Lord, maybe that's what shaped his other ideas. And I think that was true at a lot of the different philosophies that I looked at. I kind of approached a lot of religious thinkers ignoring the fact that they were religious, because I just didn't understand it. And I was just really impressed when I finally did investigate these thinkers, when I finally did read people like Aquinas, at how thoughtful and rational and reasonable they were about their faith.
So this struck you. Had you gotten an impression in your own mind that religious people, perhaps because of the background you grew up in and the fact that the religious people you had conversations with did not seem very thoughtful even about their own faith, you just tended to write believers off as unthoughtful, unthinking, not really seriously in their thought life?
Yeah, I think that's what it was. Because I had never really I encountered intelligent Christians. One of my best friends in high school was a Christian, and she was I was always jealous of how brilliant she was, and I still am. We're still very good friends. She also played a role in my coming to faith. But she didn't quite know how to talk about her faith or how to make these arguments back. And so that experience of not really seeing thoughtful Christians, and the Christians who were out there who were thoughtful, people like John Donne, people like Thomas Aquinas, T.S. Eliot, all these great thinkers, I think I just suffered from a strong case of what C.S. Lewis calls chronological snobbery, which is I just assumed, well, they only believed those things because of the age that they were in. That was just, you know, everybody believed that. You can't blame them for believing this, you know, this hogwash. And it took me coming to college and realizing, no, people actually do take this seriously. And it took me meeting a Christian who really did to then see all these other Christian thinkers through that light.
Well, let's leave the thinkers for just a second, because then you said you actually began to get into the Bible itself. You began to do battle with the scriptures. And how did that work out in your life?
Yeah, so at first I went to a Bible study, and I remember I didn't say a word throughout the entire thing. We were just reading through the Sermon on the Mount. And I was just I was struck. We were talking in that conversation about anger and how being angry with a man is equivalent to murder. And I realized that I had a lot of anger in my life, that I would often be filled with rage toward people, and I was very, very unforgiving. And also, as we were reading, my eyes just hit upon another part where Jesus says, "Let your yes be yes and your no be no," and occurred to me that in a lot of ways my own words weren't trustworthy. I had to promise things because people didn't believe that when I said something that I really meant it. And those things kind of, at first they just hit me like, huh, here I was thinking I was this really good person, and maybe this isn't true. Maybe there are actually some flaws in my character. And after that happened, I started kind of trying to live it. Like, okay, maybe instead of, you know, being angry with my roommates for not taking out the trash, maybe I'll just do it myself instead. Instead of being passive aggressive, maybe I'll try to adopt an attitude of being a servant and loving these people when I'm a little bit frustrated with them. And I found it that it made my life much, much better. Big surprise. And as I read more through the scriptures, I became more convicted that this figure of Jesus, who had never met me before, seemed to understand more about me than I myself did. And I remember I sat inside Memorial Church, which is the main church in the middle of campus, and I was reading through the book of John, and I finally reached the end. I had made a vow with myself that I would sit in and read a chapter every time I passed by. And so that proved to be quite often, and I finally made it to the end. And I started reading the crucifixion story, and I had never really understood the cross before. I kind of had heard about it, but I didn't really get it. And as I read the story of Jesus being led to the cross and crying out, my God, why have you forsaken me? I was hit by the image from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe when Aslan is on the stone table. And all of a sudden, it just clicked. And I realized why Jesus had to die for my sins. And I realized how beautiful the story was and how much I really, in many ways, needed it to be true.
Jordan, we've reached the end of the first part of our program. We're going to pick it up there when we come back, because I want you to tell us about this, because it seems to me that what you found out was, at the moment you became a believer, when it clicked, that a lot of the doubts and the questions and the intellectual questions pretty much disappeared. Now, they're going to come back later, right? But all of a sudden, faith has actually changed your mind in an instant, almost. Here's a story that's meant so much to you, and now you've accepted it by faith. And that's where we want to pick it up when we come back. Let's talk about that, how the entrance of the cross gives light to us, how it enlightens us. And we'll pick up the story with Jordan Manji again, how an atheist became a believer. And it's an exciting story, and it's a story of the working of the gospel. So stay with us. We'll be back in 2 minutes. This is Peace Talk, your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace.
Would you please welcome the pride of Alexandria, Indiana, your host, Bill Gaither.
Hey, thanks, Bill, and welcome to Homecoming Radio. Do we ever have a great show for you?
You can hear some of the great music you grew up with on Bill Gaither's Homecoming Radio, Saturday evenings at 11 on Christian Talk 92.9.
May is American Stroke Month. Stroke, the nation's third leading cause of death, is treatable when recognized quickly. Successful treatment depends on prompt emergency care, usually within 3 hours of symptom onset. For information on stroke, visit radiologyinfo.org.
Before we rejoin today's program, let me say thank you for listening to Peace Talk. Each program comes with the prayer that you will find the peace that Jesus desires for you to enjoy today. But I'd like to take a minute to tell you about the website, peacetalk.com. Go to peacetalk.com and you'll discover that Peace Talk is more than teaching and great stories. We offer opportunities for bringing Peace Talk to you and your church. If you're caught in relationship-destroying conflict, at peacetalk.com you can access relationship-restoring services. You will also find seminar retreat opportunities for your group. And at peacetalk.com you can read the blog and sign up for our free email newsletter, Peace Mail. Follow us on Peace Talk and Twitter. And please, don't overlook the donate button, because Peace Talk needs your help. Peace Talk is all about you finding peace. Let's rejoin our program, and remember, Peace Talk is your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace.
Thank you.
This is Peace Talk, your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace. I'm Larry Woods, your host. If you stuck with us through the break, glad to have you. If you're just joining us, it's good to have you to be a part of Peace Talk today. Our guest today is Jordan Manji. And Jordan is telling her story as how, as a committed atheist, how she was wooed to Christ and how she came to know the Lord. Through the efforts and the testimony and the working of good Christian people and the Bible. But let's just go back and let Jordan tell the story. So Jordan, glad to have you on the program today. Tell us, what was it? The question that we talked about during the break was, what made you wanted to go to a Bible study as a committed atheist?
Yeah, so my friend really had to answer some of my questions about God before I was willing to go to a Bible study. By the time I went to the Bible study, I was really more of a deist. And basically, it was the first time I had met anybody who could really answer some of my tough questions about God, who was really thoughtful about his faith and didn't say, you know, you should believe just because you have to have faith. He said, you should believe because there are reasonable reasons why you should believe. There's evidence for this. Why don't you consider it more thoroughly? And when I became a deist, it kind of occurred to me, hey, I've been wrong about all this stuff about God. Maybe I should spend some more time exploring. And really, when he invited me, my thought process was something like, you know, okay, the Bible, it's the most influential book in all history, and I actually haven't read it and haven't spent any time thinking through it, so maybe it wouldn't hurt to go to a Bible study to investigate it.
What did you find in the people in that Bible study? Because apparently you were drawn to them in some way. What was it about their spirit or the way they dealt with you that made Christianity and Christ perhaps inviting to you and it drew you in?
Yeah, I think in particular the people that I saw, they were very committed to actually living out their faith. So I think I'd met a lot of Christians before who were often hypocritical, who would profess one thing, but then when you looked at their lives, they weren't really living it out. And so I think the key thing in the people that I encountered was that they really followed Jesus. Not just, they didn't just believe, they didn't just say things about Jesus, but they actually lived it out and just expressed a really Christ-like love toward me and toward others. And when I saw that, when I saw and kind of learned about the cross, and then I saw that lived out, I found it to be incredibly compelling.
You went on a retreat, and you tell the story of how you were literally, you know, in the thicket, in the bushes, and how God used that little experience to help you understand, because you are a thinking person. You're not just blindly jumping into things. You're being convinced. Your heart, your head is being changed as well as your heart. So how did God speak to you in that experience of being in the bushes?
Yeah, so it had kind of started out where I had been considering things about God on an intellectual level, and then I read through the book of John and encountered the cross on a personal level, and so I started to want Christianity to be true, but wanting something to be true doesn't make it true. And so I spent more time reading. I read through the God Delusion. I read through the Skeptic's Annotated Bible. I read through debates between Christian apologists and Muslim apologists and secularists like Bart Ehrman and William Lane Craig. And basically, by the time I had made it on the retreat and finished all of my reading, I started to believe that Christianity was true. Not just that I wanted it to be true, but that there was actually strong evidence for it. And at that moment, I went out and I prayed by this pond, but my heart at that point didn't really want it to be true, and I couldn't figure out what was going on because I had previously really, really believed it, really wanted it to be true, saw this incurable need that I had that the cross could fill. But there was just this disconnect, and so I cried and I prayed and I didn't know what to do. And eventually, after an hour or so, I gave up and I said, you know, this prayer, it's not working. I'm just going to go for a walk. And so I started walking through the bushes and said, I want to try to see if I can make it to the ocean. And as I started going through this kind of briar patch, I ended up getting cut by some thorns. My leg got stuck in the mud all the way up to my knee. I thought I was going to be stuck. I thought I might die out there. All my stuff was behind. You know, it's like, you know, what if somebody comes by and steals my phone or my camera or what, you know, all of this is running through my head. But I managed finally to pull my leg out, and I say, okay, well, I might as well at this point walk along the river. And so I realized that along the river, it was actually the safest place because that's where the ground was firm. That was where all the water rushing past through, you know, thousands of years had made the ground firm. And so I walked along this river to see where it would take me. And finally, the sun set and it started to get dark, and I thought, I'm not going to be able to make it. And so I had to climb back out over the brush, get more cut, and eventually make it back to where I had left all my stuff that was still waiting there ready for me. And as I walked back to my room at the retreat, it occurred to me that this was an apt metaphor for my spiritual experience. You know, I don't know where I'm going to end up. I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it to the ocean. I don't know if I'm going to, you know, believe in God my entire life. But I need to start somewhere. And if I take this journey, if I start walking along this path, all the stuff that I'm leaving behind is still going to be there waiting for me if I change my mind. But I need to see where this might lead. And so it was at that point that I said, you know, I know there are still questions that I have. I know there's still evidence that I haven't explored. There are things that I need to look into. But I can't just stand on the sidelines forever. David Hume has this line, amidst all your philosophy, be still a man. And I knew that there's some part of my life that requires me to act. As I'm debating these weighty philosophical questions, as I'm reading about evidence for the Bible, I'm going to have to decide, how do I treat my neighbor? You know, do I care about the poor, or do I neglect them? Do I try to live chastely, with full of forgiveness and grace? Or, you know, what? How do I go about my daily life? And it was then that I realized, you know, I need to plant my flag somewhere. And there's no objective place for me to start, but Christianity is my best bet. This is what I think is true. And, you know, if I'm wrong in 10 years, so be it. But for now, I think this is the next step that I have to take if this is what the evidence is pointing me toward. And as I went on that journey, I continued to find more and more evidence that made me think Christianity is true and that it's the right right philosophy of life.
Your story says that on Easter Sunday of 2009, you were baptized. What did that baptism mean to you?
Yeah, so I think for me, baptism was kind of that next step. In the tradition that I came to faith in the Churches of Christ, and baptism is identified as the point at which you become a Christian and are saved. So for me, it was me saying, this is my commitment to faith. This is me being buried with Christ and raised like he was, as Paul puts in Romans 6. And so for me, that was kind of the moment at which I said, this is where I'm planting my flag. This is what I believe.
You found, did you not, that this is what people do, well, like you, your head was convinced and sort of, it looked to me like this way, your heart was drawn to Christ, then your head, and then when your head got there, your heart wasn't there.
Yeah.
And now when they finally got together, you realized at some point that you would have to trust him by faith and then continue to work on the doubts and the questions as you went along. But at some point, you were just going to have to trust.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I got to the point where I felt like I had enough evidence to trust. Kind of like when you're I haven't had this experience yet, so maybe it's not the best. But everyone that I've talked to says, you know, when you're deciding who you want to marry, you don't do it on the basis of no evidence. You date them, you get some experience, you see how they interact with other people, and finally you get to a point where you trust them enough to say, hey, I'm going to marry you. I'm going to make this commitment. You know, we're gonna take the vows and say I do, and you do that, and you say I don't know what person you're gonna be in 10 years or 20 years or 50 years, but I'm going to stick it through with you. And so you make this decision on the basis of trust and of evidence, but you know that you're going to have to work through the other evidence over the rest of your life. But that shouldn't stop you from taking that initial commitment.
So you found in the cross, as I understood your story correctly, that the cross was the answer, as you said, to an incurable need that you had.
Yeah.
How do you find now that when you became an atheist and you became a believer from an atheist and we're down to the very last of our program now, is how did those around you accept the change that took place in your life?
So a lot of my friends were very surprised. My friends at Harvard were less surprised because they saw more of the transition. My friends from high school were literally stunned, blown away, because I had been the most aggressive atheist they probably ever met. They told me later that they had been afraid of talking to me about faith because they were afraid that I would just tear them down. They were all very surprised, and my parents were understandably concerned, but also very very supportive of me kind of pursuing things and figuring out what I believed, and kind of happy that I found something that did make me really happy.
And I guess they're not quite sure whether they would have found the same thing, right?
My dad was raised Catholic, and eventually he likes to say his Catholic education was so good it turned him into an atheist. I think people do come down on opposite sides of things, and I think it's been a great experience for both my parents and me to learn how to love somebody with whom you really dramatically disagree.
And that's what the cross of Christ does for us, isn't it? Is it changes us and it changes the people around us. Jordan, thank you for sharing your story. It's the story that many of us don't have. We didn't come from that perspective that you came from, and we don't live the life. But what you're saying is you found that there was a time when you planted your flag in the cross of Christ, and as you said in your baptism, was being identified with him, buried with him in death, and then raised in his resurrection. Thank you for sharing your story with us. And we pray that those listening today who maybe you have doubts and you understand that your heart's being drawn to Christ, your doubts don't necessarily get solved all at once, but you can plant your faith in the cross of Jesus Christ. You can find him sufficient for the incurable need that you have to have your sins forgiven and to be brought into relationship with him. So trust Christ and remember Jordan's story of how a committed atheist found Jesus when she found the Bible and she found the cross. Thank you for being a part of Peace Talk today. This is your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.